Friday the 13th, what could go wrong? This is actually the last day that we'll be doing the program in this current location. Haven't been canceled yet, but I may have mentioned at one point over the last few weeks, I've moved to another house, same city, but I keep coming back here like Mr. Rogers, putting on my cardigan and putting on my sneakers, and basically sitting in the only room that has any furniture in it. Well, as of tonight, no more furniture. We're moving over to the new location. I don't know how different it's going to look on Monday, but it will be in a different place, and maybe it will be a little bit different. We shall see. It will be a little bit different this year on HBO, the Atlanta Falcons, taking their turn as the subject of Hard Knocks. And that news broke yesterday during this program. And my first reaction was, not really an exciting team, not really a national brand, although the NFL has been pushing the Falcons to do it. A couple of years ago, they were offered the gig. They declined it. I'm sure that league wasn't thrilled that that came out. But the bottom line is, this is a team that has been on the cusp of doing significant things, but hasn't quite been able to get it done. And there's a real question whether or not last year's performance was an aberration or whether it's the start of a trend in the wrong direction. Either way, there will be storylines, just because there's always storylines with any NFL team, no matter who it is. There will be storylines. I just don't know how compelling the story is going to be with the Atlanta Falcons. I really don't. Matt Ryan, not exactly a firebrand of a franchise quarterback. Nice guy, but not the kind of guy that's going to give you good sound bites. Who's the star going to be? Who's going to emerge as the person who's providing the sound bites? My money would be on Roddy White. We'll see what happens on that front. And then just big picture, globally, who knows where this thing is going? The NFL's made a long-term commitment to HBO. The NFL has a mechanism in place for forcing teams to do it if they don't want to do it, because the NFL needs to have a team every year to do this. The Falcons, to their credit, realize they're going to do it at some point involuntarily. They may as well do it voluntarily or semi-voluntarily now and get it over with. But the bottom line is, how much does it help a team? I don't think it does. How much can it hurt a team? I don't know. The only way you could argue that it helps a team, and this is an argument that Jets coach Rex Ryan made several years ago, the intense media scrutiny prepares the players for what could come if the team is successful down the road. There's some appeal to that, but there's nothing that's going to happen during that 4 or 5 weeks with the cameras and the microphones everywhere that is going to actually make you a better team, unless there's some, you know, the players really don't want to do it and it makes the players come closer together and they all act like James Harrison did last year in Cincinnati. I don't know. I'm looking for any reason to think that this could be a benefit for the Falcons, and I'm hard-pressed to find one. I guess your best-case scenario is that it doesn't hurt you, and in that case, why would anyone want to do it? And other than televising employees getting fired, I don't know why the NFL wants to do it, and I still can't reconcile Commissioner Roger Goodell's desire to make the process of cutting employees more humane with televising to a nation, the process of cutting employees. A nation is paying attention to a guy in Cleveland who won't be cut anytime soon, Johnny Manziel, working his way up the depth chart. And this whole idea that he's not going to be the starter. I mean, the Browns are starting to realize that it's a bunch of crap. I couldn't think of a more appropriate word than crap. Here's Coach Mike Pettine talking about the current state of the quarterback competition in Cleveland.
Brian had been here for those, whatever it was, 7, 8 weeks before the draft even started. That was essentially a head start. And I don't think it's insurmountable. I think Brian is securely ahead of him right now, but we will compete and we'll decide. The issue for us as a staff will be finding the right time to name the starter. If you wait too late, then nobody's ready for the opener. If you do it too soon, then it wasn't a true competition. So we're going to have to, that'll be part of our discussions as well, as far as, okay, here's the plan, here's a date that we want to go ahead and name it.
But it's not really a true competition. This is a fallback plan that's preemptively in place in the event Johnny Manziel can't command the huddle, can't make it clear to everyone that he's the best option. Surely the Browns regard him to be the best option. Brian Hoyer is a guy who was available for anyone to be signed. And the Browns eventually signed him last year because former GM Mike Lombardi really liked him. And the fans liked what they saw from Hoyer until he tore his ACL. But if they were committed to Hoyer, they wouldn't have used the 22nd overall pick in the draft. They traded up. That's the Trent Richardson first rounder from the Colts. Traded up 4 spots to get Manziel. If Hoyer's your guy, why do it? And you also don't put Hoyer out there on the field with the presumption that eventually he's going to be benched in favor of Manziel, because you take that load off a guy's shoulders, you could have a Derek Anderson situation all over again like in 2007 when Anderson presumed along with everyone else that Brady Quinn was eventually going to be playing instead of Anderson, and without having to worry every play, every throw, every incompletion, every turnover about whether that's the last one, without that worry, knowing that it's inevitable you're going to be benched, you get to a point where you end up being the full season starter. So here's when they'll name Johnny Manziel the starter, before the point where they would have to put him out on the field in a preseason game behind the backup offensive line. That's the moment that this true competition will end, and that's the moment where Johnny Manziel will be the true starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. And the truth for the NFL franchise in Washington, and look, I have, and I don't want to make a big deal about it, I've been trying to avoid saying the term Redskins after the letter that was sent on behalf of 77 different organizations to every player. Some of the stuff in there really struck me as, you know what, it's not going to be something that I can do 100 out of 100 times, but if Native Americans really are bothered by this phrase, bothered by this word, bothered by this logo, that's something that we should all try to adjust our behavior to avoid saying. And I don't mean anything against the Washington NFL franchise. This is a controversy that is going nowhere. And for anyone out there who was on the fence, and I don't know how many people are still on the fence, I think what's happening is over time, the people who oppose the name are becoming more vocal and more organized, and the people who support the name also vocal and organized. I don't know how many people are in the middle on this. Anyone who was in the middle, after seeing some of the commercial that was played during the NBA Finals in select markets the other night, you may change your mind. Here's the final 30 seconds of a two-minute ad that's available on YouTube and has nearly 3 million views.
Unyielding, strong, indomitable. Native Americans call themselves many things. The one thing they don't.
Yeah, you know, early on, the argument was Native Americans aren't bothered by the term Redskins. That was one of the arguments that was being pushed by an ultimately very clumsy PR effort by the Washington NFL franchise. It's hard to make the argument that Native Americans aren't offended by the name when you see that, and when you consider that it was produced by the National Congress of American Indians, and not just some fringe tribe that's looking for some sort of attention grab. The National Congress of American Indians, founded in 1944, it is the oldest, largest, and most representative American Indian and Alaskan Native organization serving the broad interests of tribal governments and communities. And until someone shows me that this is in some way some sort of a sham hoax organization, I look at National Congress of American Indians, I look at that commercial, and I say, wait, these people really are offended. And, you know, you take that argument out of the equation, the idea that Native Americans aren't offended, makes it harder to defend the ongoing use of the name, no matter how long it's been used, no matter what the intentions were, no matter whether or not Dan Snyder is never going to change the name or over his dead body or whatever the case may be, although over his dead body, I guess, is a softening of the never position. Regardless, we need to take seriously the fact that Native Americans are offended. And I guess the response will be, well, not enough of them are offended. And look, plenty of offensive things are said about Italians. I don't get offended by it. That doesn't make them non-offensive. Plenty of offensive things are said about West Virginians, of which I'm one. I don't get offended by it. Others in my family do. They're entitled to. The fact that I don't doesn't make it offensive. So when you see an organized effort to demonstrate a belief by Native Americans that it's an offensive term, you get to the point where you wonder how much longer this is going to go on. I think that Daniel Snyder believes that there is a point at which he will utter some magic phrase, some combination of words that will cause the opposition to realize that they've been wrong all along and they'll go away. And that's just not going to happen. This battle is joined, the debate will continue, and it's not going away. The only magic words that will make that debate end is that we are changing the name of the franchise. When we come back, we will talk to a member of the Miami Dolphins who signed a new contract early this year after one season with the team. We talked to him right after he signed. We're going to talk to him now that he's had a chance to get a feel for how the 2014 Dolphins may or may not come together. Cornerback Brent Grimes returns to the program. And then it's time to take your questions again, wrapping up the week in what soon will be my former studio, on our way to the new studio, on our way out for a break. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. There's the logo, the new logo, the old theme song. One of the fairly new members of the team entering his second season with the Miami Dolphins. Cornerback Brent Grimes returning to the program. Brent, what do you think about that old school fight song?
I say it's interesting.
Well, at one point,
when I first heard it, the first game, I started laughing, but I mean, now I kind of like it because I know we score, so I mean, this is a good thing now.
Well, at one point, they updated it, kind of a new age version, and it was horrendous, far worse than the original. But last time we talked to you, you had just signed your new contract with the team. You've had a little chance now to process that new income. Give me one thing that you bought to celebrate your new contract.
Just one thing.
Best thing you bought to celebrate.
Oh, I got this TV. This 90-inch TV.
Did you get the new one that curves? You know, everybody's got a flat screen, so they got the new technology that curves. Did you get that one?
No, I didn't get that. I just got a flat screen. I had it in my living room. Big TV.
Okay, well, next roster bonus, then, you got to get the one that curves, because they got to convince us to buy. Now that we all have the flat screen TVs that last forever, they got to convince us to buy something new.
Yeah, they gotta put something out there to make you get something. They can't just leave it the same.
Well, this August you'll be able to go home after training camp practices and watch your old team, the Atlanta Falcons, on Hard Knocks. And you came to Miami after the Dolphins had done Hard Knocks. You left Atlanta before they did Hard Knocks. What would be your thought process, your reaction to learning that you're on a team that's doing the Hard Knocks series?
I don't know. I think it would be pretty cool. Maybe sometimes it would get annoying, but I feel like with the cameras being there, it would kind of become normal. Like you wouldn't even realize that they're there anymore since they're there every day. So, I mean, I'll be cool with it.
Who do you think of the guys that were on the team when you were there? Who's going to emerge as the person we talk about, the guy that gives the funny quotes, the guy that does the outlandish stuff that everyone's going to react to?
I would have said hands down before it would have been, but he just got hurt, Sean Witherspoon. But I don't even know. A lot of the guys I was with are not on the team, like Thomas DeCou. I mean, Steven Nicholas would have been a good one, but he's not on the team anymore. Asante. So there's a lot of people that I thought would be popular on the show that's not on the team anymore. So, I mean, I have to watch. You know, Harry Douglas. Matter of fact, there you go. My friend Harry he's going to give you something on that show.
You know, you were there for a lot of good years with the Falcons. How much attention do you pay to where they are now? Because I think the jury's out on whether last year was just a fluke bad year or whether the team's moving in the wrong direction. Do you pay any attention to that kind of stuff?
No, I keep up with them because I know a lot of people on the team. I still talk to people on the team and things, and they had a rough year last year. I mean, a lot of people got hurt, and things didn't go their way. And then starting off this year, one of the main players goes out for the year in OTA. So, I mean, it's just a string of bad luck. So, I mean, you just got to wait. They'll start playing games, and they'll be in games, I can tell you that. They're going to compete. So, I mean, but I keep up with them because I talk to my friends.
4-12 last year for the Falcons, 8-8 in your first season with the Miami Dolphins. What kind of changes have you seen so far this offseason to the team that finished at 500 last year?
I mean, the most obvious change is we have a new offensive coordinator. So it's we're going against a completely different offense every day, and that's the main difference. You see their different schemes and their different ways of going about things, and it's cool to watch.
What has been your reaction to how Ryan Tannehill is adapting to this new offense? Because the last offense was one he knew very well from Texas A&M. Now, brand new offense, how's he doing?
I believe he's doing well. You can definitely see the progress from the first day of OTA practice and to now, and we're about to go into our mini camp, and he's doing a lot of things. You can see he's feeling more comfortable with the time and everything, and getting people in the right position and where they're supposed to be, and just little things, and he's getting more and more comfortable with it.
Receiver Mike Wallace joined the team last year when you did. He was one of the big money free agents. He seemed to be frustrated at times last year with his role. How is he doing now? How do you see him improving his output in his second year with the team?
I mean, I feel like he likes to make plays, and sometimes when you see him frustrated, it's because he wants to impact games every single game. Some games it didn't work out for him. But with this offense, he's still the same guy. He can deep threat every play. You always got to know where he is. But with this, in this scheme, he's moving around. Last year, for the most part, he was just at one spot. Now, with this offense, he's moving around, and he can do some things with him. So, I think he's excited about it, and you can tell by how he's approaching practice and just talking to him. He's excited about being able to make some plays this year.
Millions of people play fantasy football, and one of the biggest questions for every NFL team, who's going to be the starting running back? Who's going to get the touches? Who do you see emerging from the group of tailbacks to becoming the guy for the Dolphins this year?
I really can't speak on that right now. I just know they're all competing. They're all doing their part right now. It's not my call, and especially with running backs, it's hard to tell. I mean, without OTAs with just a helmet on, you don't know, so... As we get through this mini camp and training camp and some preseason games, I think that who's going to be the starter will clear itself up.
Give us an idea, Brent, of what actually happens during these OTA practices. Guys are wearing helmets, no pads. There's not supposed to be any contact, but it appears that a certain amount of it is inevitable. How does an OTA practice compare to a full pads training camp practice?
I mean, you just answered it. With no pads, it's not really any contact. D-line, O-line can't really – I mean, you can get kind of what they do, but without pads, they can't really play their game. And in the training camp fully padded practice, that's where it's a lot different, is in the trenches and things like that, because they can really play, do their thing.
From your perspective, your position, cornerback, how do you cover a receiver in an OTA practice in comparison to how you'd cover a receiver at training camp?
It's the same. I mean, for OTAs, you're just getting back to playing football again. So, it's just getting your timing down and working on, footwork and things like that. And then you fine-tune that throughout OTAs. And then you work out the whole month you have off and come back in training camp and get even better. I mean, but as far as a corner and receiver, it's kind of the same as far as OTA to training camp practice.
You guys had a strange year last year with the Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito stuff. How much of that echoes into 2014? Issue at all? Is it talked about? Is it motivation? How does it affect the mindset of the team for this season?
No, we're just. I think I can speak for everybody and just say that we're glad that that's over and we want to put that behind us and move on to the next year. I mean, everybody knows that it happened. I was here, so we can't erase it out of the past or whatever. But we're excited to move on from it and give people some good things to talk about this year instead of that stuff that happened last year.
And what will we be talking about this year with the Dolphins? People are having a hard time getting a read on the AFC East. The Patriots, maybe they're dipping a little bit. Who's rising up? Are the Jets any better? Where do the Dolphins fit 1-4 in that AFC East division?
I think we could do very well this year. I'm not one to make predictions or anything like that. But if you watched last year, we have a lot of potential. I mean, we finished 8-8. We had a great chance of making the playoffs, and we messed up. There's no other way to put it. The last two games, we blew it and lost our chance of making the playoffs. So I mean, if we were in a lot of close games. So we just, you know, make a few more plays here and there. We can get in the playoffs. And once you get in the playoffs, you never know what can happen from there.
Is it more about competing with a team like the Jets to get a wild card berth, or is it about trying to topple the New England Patriots this year, realistically, for the Dolphins?
Everybody's goal coming in is to win a division. Like, you're not going in just saying, oh, I want to make the wild card. I don't know if anybody, you talk to any team in the NFL, their goal from day one is to win a division, and then that's our goal, is to try to win a division and go from there.
Buffalo Bills trying to get into that mix as well. They made the big draft day trade to get receiver Sammy Watkins. And from your perspective, given your time in the league, you know, we see a lot of rookie receivers struggle right away. The Bills are counting on Watkins to make a big impact. Why do you think receivers struggle in the NFL their first and second seasons?
Because it's not college anymore. So a lot more talent on the field. It's a lot more players that can play. Like in college, you might go against a team that might be just a, you know, you got your good players on the field, but it's a lot of guys that once this season is over, is never going to play football again. Whereas in the NFL, these are all pros, and they're all doing this for making a living and feed their families. So that's one of the things that is the biggest difference. But talent is talent. If a guy can play, he's going to be able to play, and you just got to wait and see.
What was different about Julio Jones when you were with him in Atlanta his rookie year? Was it just he's got so much talent that there was no way anybody was going to hold him down?
Yeah, he's extremely talented. Julio is you know, big, fast, strong. You know, he's a special player. So he's one of the ones that can adjust right away. And there's other ones that can do that. So you just got to wait and see. You just got to wait until they play and see how it goes.
Give me a rookie on your team this year based on what you've seen so far. It's gotten your attention. It's impressed you. It's made you think this guy can make an impact right away.
Our receiver, I mean, all of them doing well, but Jarvis make a lot of nice catches. Like, he makes a one-handed catch every practice. So, I mean, that's cool. That's something that stands out. But Walt is doing very well as far as, you know, getting his hands on receivers at the line, and you can see what he can do. So there's a free agent receiver that's doing well, and you know, so it's a lot of talent out there. So I mean, I don't pay attention to, you know, linemen so much, offensive linemen, things like that. So I can't really speak on that. But the ones that I do watch have been doing well.
Well, we'll see what second-round pick Jarvis Landry can do when it's time to put the pads on. It'll be here before we know it. Enjoy your time off before camp gets started. Congratulations again on all your success. Hope to talk to you again down the road.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Brent Grimes, Dolphins cornerback, one of the leaders of that team. And they were right on the cusp last year. And like he said it himself, they screwed it up. I mean, they were in position 8-6. Won a couple of tough games. Had a couple of easier games. All they needed to do was win one. What a cluster of teams at the end of the year last year. Remember how exciting it was in the AFC? We didn't know who was going to get in, and really it came down to a bad call in the Chargers-Chiefs game, or the Steelers would have been the ones who got in. So hopefully you can get in with your phone call. Hopefully, well, for our purposes, hopefully it's a cluster of phone calls and we have so many to choose from, but we want all of you who want to ask a question to be able to do so, and the best way to do that is pick up your phone right now. Get in line, 888-237-5269. We'll take your calls after the break. We'll answer some Twitter questions, and we'll wrap up shop here in this. This is the only studio in West Virginia that PFT Live has ever known, and we're going to move to another West Virginia studio. So last segment ever, to the extent that anyone cares, and hell, I barely do, but at least it's a way to throw the break. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. What better way to wrap up a Friday the 13th edition of PFT Live than throwing all caution to the wind and allowing anyone and everyone to phone in and ask us a question? First one won't be a telephone call, though. It never is. At ATA 4004 wants to know, will the Buffalo Bills shock the world in 2014? Well, I assume that that question means shock the world by, you know, winning the Super Bowl, but some would say they would be shocking the world by, I don't know, getting to the playoffs or winning a playoff game. And I think it's going to be a tall order for the Buffalo Bills to get to the playoffs. They got a lot of eggs in the Sammy Watkins basket. We touched on that with Brent Grimes earlier in the program. The difficulties of a receiver making an impact right away when you consider everything that was given up to get Sammy Watkins. Tall order for the Buffalo Bills. They got to keep quarterback E.J. Manuel healthy. Weren't able to do that last year. The defense could be a little bit better with Jim Schwartz running it. It's going to be tough to catch the Patriots. It's going to be tough to get one of the six playoff spots in the AFC. I don't know what shocking the world really constitutes. I'd be shocked if they win the division. And I don't think they will. So I guess to answer the question after about 2 minutes and 58 seconds, no. Back to the Twitter bag, at DG Elite, DGL Elite. My apologies, DGL Elite. How do you see the NFC East shaking out this year? Eagles number one, and then who knows how the rest of it goes. Cowboys second? Have the Giants done enough? They hit a lot of singles, a lot of infield singles in free agency. I don't know how I feel about the Giants because I don't know how I feel about Eli Manning right now in his career. I don't know how I feel about the pass rush. Pass rush is nothing compared to what it used to be. Don't know how I feel about the offensive line. And now John Beeson may be out for a while, one of the few bright spots last year for the team. I think it's going to be Philadelphia. Could it be Philadelphia, then Washington, and then the Cowboys and the Giants battling out for fourth place? I don't know. All I know is the Eagles are the class of the division, higher expectations this year than last year. As to the other three, I don't think it matters. I don't think any of them are going to the playoffs other than the team that wins the division. And I have a feeling that we will not have a fourth annual NFC East Championship game on NBC to close out Week 17. I have a feeling that division will be decided before Week 17. John in Portland, welcome back to the program. What's up, buddy?
Hi, Mike. I wanted to ask you, with the officiating disaster yesterday in the World Cup made me think about officiating in the NFL. How do you think officiating in the NFL is going to change going forward? And another secondary question, Qatar, it looks like it's a disaster. So if that falls through and the U.S. gets the World Cup, they obviously want to play in Los Angeles. Would that impact whether L.A. gets a new NFL / World Cup stadium?
Well, John, thank you for the phone call. And I can guarantee you that over the next month, I will watch precisely as much soccer as I watch baseball. Absolutely none. I'm vaguely familiar there was some sort of officiating thing yesterday. I don't know what it was, but I can understand the connection between that and the NFL. Look, what the NFL needs to be concerned about is creating the impression that the NFL is doing everything it can in order to ensure that it is getting every call right from having full-time officials, even if it would only create a minor uptick in the accuracy of the calls, from expanding the use of instant replay, from taking replay out of the stadiums where some of the referees tend to screw it up, to taking it to the league office to allow for every call to be examined that way, to completely embracing technology with cameras everywhere. Use the drones. Put them in the orange pylons. Blanket the field with cameras, because each and every year that the NFL becomes more and more popular, each and every game becomes more important. Each and every call becomes more important. And you have got to do everything you can to create the impression that you're trying to get it right. And as to the World Cup, look, if there's a chance to get the World Cup in 2022 because it's 185 degrees in Qatar on any given day in June, yeah, that helps provide an avenue for public money that would potentially help build a stadium. And it's 8 years out, so it can't hurt if there's a possibility that the World Cup would be featured prominently in a stadium that would end up hosting an NFL team. Back to the Twitter bag, at SarcasticSteve1, with a very non-sarcastic question. Steve, you are not properly honoring your name. Prediction for Steelers and Lions this year. Both teams are capable of making it to the postseason. I feel more strongly about the Steelers making it at this point than I do about the Lions. I'm very intrigued by what new coach Jim Caldwell can do with a talented lineup. Ultimately, he's got to get through to players who need to step up and provide the leadership. Matthew Stafford, the reluctant franchise quarterback who doesn't want to do the things that a leader truly does. Great quarterback, but is he going to get the most out of what he can do? When you hear comments from players like receiver Golden Tate about how hard it is to pick up this new offense that Joe Lombardi has brought to town, the Saints-style offense, okay, Matthew Stafford, it's on you to get all the skill position players together to work out during that six-week period between the end of the offseason program and the start of training camp. Help everyone get more comfortable now that you've studied the playbook, now that you're starting to know the offense. That's going to be one of the signs, if it happens, that the maturity continues and that Matthew Stafford is getting to the point where he's as committed as other franchise quarterbacks are. He's got the contract that makes him a franchise quarterback. Does he have the attitude where football is his sole and only focus, sole and only, same meaning? Can other players sign on that same way? Can they get the most out of their talent? The Lions, one of the few teams you look at right now and say the sum of the parts is less than the individual pieces would suggest. They need to find a way to get more out of that team. Steelers, I just think they're due. They'd have been the number 7 seed each of the last 2 years. I think they're finally starting to move in the right direction. Watch out for the Steelers in the AFC. Back to the Twitter bag at Nollins All Day. Nollins All Day, do the Saints have one of the best secondaries in the league? Well, at the safety position with Jairus Byrd, if he's healthy, Kenny Vaccaro, if he's healthy, you could make an argument that they're maybe in position to do the kinds of things the Seahawks did last year. But I think this is more about the scheme up front, the front seven. Secondaries look a lot better when you are chasing the quarterback around, when the quarterback's out of his comfort zone. A lot of guys can play effective corner and safety when the quarterback has no time to make up his mind. I think it's more about the front seven so far in New Orleans. But the way we saw that defense improve, I can guarantee you this. If the defense improves as much from 2014 over 2013 as it improved from 2013 over 2012, Saints are going to be one of the best teams in the NFL. And my prediction generally for the NFC right now, of the three teams, Saints, Seahawks, 49ers, who get the higher seed in the postseason, that's the team that I believe is the most legitimate shot and candidate to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. Another Twitter question at Ryan Thor. How long will Marshawn Lynch be the number one back for the Seahawks? Well, not much longer. And he sees that coming. It's a combination of Marshawn Lynch realizing that the Seahawks have paid a lot of other players on that team who may not have contributed as much as he did to that Super Bowl run. And Marshawn Lynch realizing he's 28 years old, he doesn't have a whole lot left, the wheels are going to come off. And sometimes they come off slowly, and sometimes they come off abruptly, like hitting four potholes all at once, or I guess one really big pothole. Marshawn Lynch can be counted on to hit a home run pretty much every game. I mean, we've taken it for granted that at some point, in a close game, in a game that the Seahawks are trailing, in a game where the dagger needs to be applied, 40-yard touchdown run by Marshawn Lynch. It's like clockwork. This is not a pass-oriented offense. I love Russell Wilson, and I'd be tempted to take him over Andrew Luck if I were starting a franchise today. But this is a run-based offense. At a time when it's all pass, 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 Seahawks and 49ers, two best teams in the NFL, what do? They run to set up the pass, or they run to set up the run, and then they pass when they have to, or pass when everyone's expecting a run, and play great defense. And Marshawn Lynch is a big part of that. He's not going to be a big part of it for much longer. And I think his goal is to get as much money as he can before he gets the Sean Alexander treatment and is thanked for his contributions and asked politely to gather up his things and get the hell out of here. We're going to get the hell out of here right after. One final question from at Ethan301. How big of a role will Alfred Morris play as a pass catcher in the Redskins offense? Remains to be seen, but when you consider Jay Gruden probably going to bring exactly what he has been doing in Cincinnati over. Haven't looked at Gio Bernard's numbers from last year. Morris has primarily been a guy who bangs the ball between the tackles. Last year, fourth in the NFL. The prior year, he had a big season. Prior year, he'd have gotten MVP votes, but for Adrian Peterson. I think they want Alfred Morris to be their guy. You don't hear any other names. You don't hear this talk of guys eating away touches. All the and Seattle running back by committee, Tampa Bay running back by committee. In Washington, it's still Alfred Morris. And the key to that offense is going to be RG3. I don't really have a strong opinion at this point how much we're going to see Alfred Morris catching the football. I do have a strong opinion that we're going to see him continue to run the football and run the football and run the football some more, especially because the other great running threat on that offense, RG3, I think they're going to be very judicious about how they expose him to potential injury. They want to keep him healthy, and the best way to do it is to only run him in spots and otherwise feed the beast that is Alfred Morris. We're going to we're going to feed the beast that is my stomach. It's lunchtime. I'm hungry. I'm going to go eat. And then we'll be back right here, the final show with Jacket and Tie, NBCSN's Pro Football Talk, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Half-hour program, prime number series continues. If you haven't voted on number 13, well, it's kind of a landslide, but go ahead and vote anyway. Dan Marino and others, Jake Scott, Kurt Warner. I'm surprised the gap isn't a little closer between Marino and Kurt Warner, because after all, Warner won a Super Bowl. We'll see how that final vote plays out. We'll get you up to date on all the latest news and information. And check us out all weekend long, ProFootballTalk.com. I know it's the slow time, but there's still a lot happening, and we will keep you up to date on all of it at ProFootballTalk.com all weekend long. Have a great one. See you Monday.